This episode is brought to you in collaboration with Vida Glow, the global number one marine collagen brand and leaders in the ingestible space. It is estimated that globally, around 1% of healthcare research and innovation is invested in female-specific conditions. Recognizing female health is under-researched and underserved, Vida Glow has applied its female-first, concern-solution approach to the health category with the launch of their Women's Health range, a science-backed range of health supplements meticulously formulated specifically for women based on their unique physiological requirements. The range includes Gut Pro, a powerful multi-strain probiotic that goes beyond standard probiotic supplements, De-Stress, an orange-flavored chewable liquid burstlet designed to relieve symptoms of stress and mild anxiety, Prenatal Plus, an advanced two-in-one prenatal supplement that supports preconception and pregnancy, and Multi 360, a once-daily super-strength multivitamin specifically formulated to support the overall function of the female body. What's more, Vida Glow are donating £1 for every women's health product to my charity, Lady Garden Foundation. If you haven't already, go check out the new range online at www.vidaglow.com. That's www.vidaglow.com. Welcome to The Happy Vagina, a podcast dedicated to celebrating pioneers in the female space. Each week, we chat to a different human being who tells us about their experiences trying to change the face of women's health. And this week, we are joined. I'm so excited about this. This is such a long time coming. I can't believe this is happening. With the founder of Vida Glow, Anna Lay, the force behind the leading ingestible beauty brand, along with health expert and mental health advocate, resident GP on ITV's This Morning, Dr. Sarah Kayat. And we will be doing a deep dive into the topic of women's health. But before we do that and look at where women's health is at today and how we can support our own health as women, I think we need to wind the clock back with you, Anna, because you are the brains, the beauty, and, you know, the inspiration behind Vida Glow. And it's a brand that I've known for a long time because I've been taking your collagen. But I was actually really moved to hear how you came to work in this space, because you actually were struggling quite severely with hair loss.
Yes, that's right. So I discovered collagen because I was taking every supplement I could find for hair, skin and nails, but in particular for hair loss, because I had quite significant hair loss from, I've only ever had one journalist ask me this, but I believe it's because I have von Willebrand's disease, and I had lots of operations in my late teens and early 20s, which led to a lot of hemorrhaging. And I was only diagnosed with von Willebrand's when I was pregnant with my first child, actually.
Can you just tell the audience what that is?
It's a blood clotting disorder, and it's actually not incredibly dangerous unless you've had an operation. So usually they'll give you like a factor VIII into your veins to clog your blood, and I've had four cesareans because it's genetic, so there's no instrumental delivery, forceps or vacuum. So we've had to have cesareans, and actually two of my cesareans were under a general anaesthetic because my blood platelets didn't cooperate, I suppose. And so there was too high a risk of putting a needle into my spine, an epidural or a spinal block. So I was under a general for two of my births. Winding back the clock, I had precancerous cells in my cervix, SIN1 and then SIN2. And so I had cone biopsies when I was young, and I've also had my tonsils removed. And from those operations, I hemorrhaged significantly, and they were within about 2 years. And then I had to go back into surgery several times, both for my tonsils and for SIN 1 and 3, to stop the hemorrhaging. So I actually think it was that significant depletion of nutrients from the blood loss that caused the hair loss, because the hair loss only happened after those couple of years of those operations. But it was like a Labrador, you know, like on white tiles with black hair, it was just shedding everywhere. And nothing I took really worked until I had discovered this product in Japan, where collagen supplementation, and in Asia in general, is very widely accepted and has been around for a very long time.
Really?
Yeah. So I went to a restaurant, they asked if I wanted my soup infused with collagen. Mm. I went to the gym, I was asked whether I wanted a collagen water. So this was very new in 2012. I felt like collagen was Botox. So, you know, I took enough home because I was interested enough in this product, and I was told to take three a day, which you absolutely do not need to take three a day to get results. And it was those real tangible benefits that I saw from collagen supplementation. Aside from hair loss, things like the plumpness in my skin, how fast my nails were growing was borderline annoying, actually. And it was just this, and it's called Vida because I was born in Brazil and Vida means life in Portuguese. So Vida Glow. And we launched with one product, which was our original marine collagen, which is still, I mean, today that product sells one unit every 4 seconds around the world. And so even though we started as a collagen brand where collagen wasn't the beauty buzzword that it is today, I feel like we've really expanded into a much more targeted, concern-led approach to beauty and now into women's health.
I hadn't understood. I knew your story about hair loss, but I didn't understand about the hemorrhaging. Can I just ask you, I've got a couple of questions really, and one is what happened? When you for anyone that's listening that doesn't know what that is and might be like that, you know, what happens when you hemorrhage after? Because you said it's within 2 years, so it's not immediately afterwards.
No, it was within a 2 year period that I had my tonsils removed and I had the SYN 1 and
got
then
it.
SYN 3.
Got it.
And that was just picked up when I had a regular pap smear for the first time when I was 19.
Got it.
So then I had a scrape and then I had a cone biopsy.
Okay.
And so then that was, so what happens is actually quite awful. When I had my tonsils removed, I was back at home. It had been 4 days after the operation and I just started bleeding out of my mouth. And the interesting thing about when you have blood coming out of your mouth and when you swallow blood, blood comes back out because you can't digest it and it's black. And so then I went to the hospital because I knew that was something quite wrong. But by the time I got to the hospital, there was so much blood coming out. It was like a scene out of Saw. But instead of being red blood because I was obviously swallowing it because it was out of my mouth, I was then having to vomit it back up. And it's like black, gluggy. And so I had to have emergency operation to stop the bleeding. And with the cervical bleeding, that was awful because in the end they had to, one of the first time they had to cauterize me when I was awake because there was no time to put me under to actually stop the bleeding. And then once they did that, I went in and I'll never forget it because they said to me, no eating for 24 hours, but I was starving. And the reason they don't want you to eat is that in case you need to go back into surgery again, it's dangerous if you've eaten. You know, that's why you're always fasting before a cesarean or whatever. But of course I had eaten because I was really hungry and I broke the rules. And so then the worst part about having to go back into surgery after that was that pain in your throat from them having to put the tube down so you don't choke on your own gunk. But what happened with that hemorrhaging is that they put a vaginal pack in, which is like a wet, is that the best way to describe it? It's like a wet cloth, basically.
Yeah, it's a really absorbent piece of material.
Exactly. And it's like a cloth that feels wet. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, maybe my catheter's leaking because I could feel the, like something rubbing against my leg. And I was with my dad at the time and I said, Dad, I think my catheter, can you look? And he had a look and actually I was bleeding through the vaginal pack. With this last cesarean, which was actually I was able to have him awake, which was the most amazing experience. But about 4 hours after he was born, I also had a hemorrhage and they had to do what's called a fundal rub, which was one of the most painful experiences I've ever had, whereas they manually have to contract the uterus by hand with one hand and then the midwife, she was actually pregnant.
Oh, my God.
On her knees,
oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And
oh my
the
God,
other
hang
one
on.
Scraping the blood out. So it is... Oh. It is, von Willebrand's disease is serious if you have an operation.
Well, but also if you live in the outback. I mean, this was all in Australia.
Yes.
And you live in Sydney?
Sydney.
So there are hospitals.
Yeah.
Like this stuff is like really, really scary for everyone everywhere. But if you're like living in a Western kind of like affluent city, but if you remove yourself from either having the privilege of being supported financially or you just live like, I don't know, if you live in like a farm in like the outback of Australia, what happens?
Well, it's not like hemophilia, for example, where you knock yourself. So it's
you can't die from it. Surely, Dr. Sara, well, you can die from it.
I mean, anyone can die from bleeding in excess.
Yeah.
But because it's not considered as, I guess, as severe as something like hemophilia, it's usually more controlled.
Yes.
So if you know you're about to have an operation, if you know you're about to go into a situation where it could be dangerous, they tend to control the situation a bit more.
Okay, so the person that knows
they've got
it. But
I wasn't diagnosed until I had my first baby, so we didn't know why I was bleeding.
My next question, actually, you've already kind of like headed towards a little bit, was about having to give birth to your two of your children under general anaesthetic.
Yeah.
I wondered how that was and is for
you. It was terrible. It was a terrible experience. And I've had a lot of birth trauma because my first, I found out at 36 weeks I needed to have a cesarean, which crushed me. And of course, now in hindsight, it really doesn't matter how you have your baby. But
no.
I think as when you're planning on a natural delivery with a doula and you get told just very matter-of-factly, because in my experience with doctors, especially specialists, is that they're wonderful, but they actually don't talk to each other very much and they really stay in their lanes. Do you find that? So like, for example, my hematologist was like, by the way, it's a no instrumental delivery. So I was like, oh, okay. I don't know what that means. I'm not a doctor. So then I go and see the OB and he says, so I got a letter from Dr. Tang saying it's a non-instrumental delivery. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what that means. He said, well, that means I can't use forceps or vacuums. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I wasn't planning on using that anyway. And he was like, well, yeah, it's not as simple as that. Quite often vaginal births do end in instrumental delivery. So what am I going to do if we have a state of emergency? And now knowing so many women that have given birth and so many, actually most, have used some sort of vacuum or forceps for the delivery, you know, and then being explained that actually if the baby has von Willebrand's and we use a vacuum or a forceps and it causes bleeding to the brain. So then you have to make these really instant decisions. And then I think the stress of that, I went into labor early at 37 weeks and his lungs weren't quite ready. So he was rushed off straight away into intensive care and spent a week in an incubator before I could hold him. That was my first where I was awake. The second one, Henry, I thought, okay, I know I'm going to have a cesarean, but it's going to be an active cesarean where I get skin on skin straight away. And there's a lot of options for women who want to have a cesarean in that way. And the anaesthetist called me at 6 p.m. the night before I was scheduled, because again, they don't talk to each other, and said, I've just looked at your blood platelets. I can't put a needle in your spine. So I said, oh, yay, I get to try for a VBAC. Like, I mean, how ignorant, but really when you're not in that field, you don't know. And he was like, no, I have to put you to sleep. And I just was driving home and I just remember sobbing like a baby to this anaesthetist. And he was so understanding because his wife had a four-week-old baby. So he said, he was so disappointed for me, but that was the reality. And then with my daughter, I didn't care. I said, I don't mind, but can you please just not tell me the night before? So I'd love to have an active cesarean, but if my blood platelets don't cooperate, I'm happy to have a general, but could I just have a couple of weeks' notice? And so they told me at 35 weeks that my platelets were really not cooperating. And she was born at 37.
And just to make it super, super clear for everyone that's listening, your daughter who was born 12 weeks ago.
No, that's my fourth.
That was your fourth.
My fourth was amazing because I went into I had four miscarriages after my third child and until I got Albert. And so when I went into my 10-week scan, I said to my OB, I just want a general. Let's book it in at 38 weeks.
Okay.
I don't want any fuss. And he was like, okay. But he wasn't really into it. He really wanted me to have an active cesarean. But I was like, I can't deal with the head noise of trying for the birth and then being disappointed again. So this time I'm just booking in a general. And then once I did my diabetes test at the 28 weeks, I knew he was in cahoots with my hematologist because the two of them would have the exact conversations with me at separate appointments.
And now I was they all talk to each other. You I'm like that.
Exactly, fourth baby later, they were talking to each other and my anaesthetist as well. And so and I didn't want to keep doing the tests to have the active cesareans like I did with my first three, or the middle two, because it's like 19 tubes of blood that they have to take every month. It's a lot of blood tests and extra appointments. And with already three kids, I couldn't be bothered. But in the end, I think it was at 30 weeks, he started the conversation saying, I really want you to have this experience. It would be amazing for you not to be under a general. It would be great for you to be able to hold a baby. You've never held any of your children once you've given birth. And so then that started the conversation. And then in the end, the gods aligned and I had a normal cesarean, which was actually quite a beautiful experience. It was a lot less clinical. I had my playlist with my music. My husband was in the room with me. There was no rushing. He came straight out and onto me and onto my chest, and he was feeding in recovery. So it was actually quite beautiful. He then got a staph infection when he was 4 days old. So we don't.
Okay.
But the first four days were gorgeous.
And do you feel like there's the genuine kind of like desire and want as a woman to have a child in the way that you want to, but did you feel under pressure from society to have a particular birth?
I would say probably the first time around.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I mean, Dr. Sarah, you're pregnant as well, so you could probably relate to this. But I find that with your first child, it's impossible to get past the birth. You know, like that's all you can think about is the birth. And it's bizarre because we see women with babies all the time. But for me, I read every book by Ina May Gaskin and Spiritual Midwifery, and I had affirmations. Like, I mean, I laugh at it now because I don't know anyone's birth who has been straightforward. But, you know, I think there is a real, I think most women, and I had a midwife say this to me in hospital, and I was really moved by what she said, because at the hospital I gave birth, they had this big sign about what's in formula and what's in breast milk. And with breast milk, it went all the way to the floor, and then with formula, it was much smaller. And I said, gosh, I've never really looked at that sign before. Like, it's quite impactful. She said, it is, but most women want to breastfeed. But actually, for something that's so free and natural, it's very unnatural, isn't it? Mm. I mean, my fourth time breastfeeding has been by far the hardest experience. And I think it can be really crushing for women when you are sold this idea that you'll have this baby and you'll push it out and it will be serene and then you'll have no drugs and then it'll go on your breast. And actually, birth and postpartum really don't work like that at all. And I was floored fourth time around. This has been by far my most difficult postpartum. And
yet you choose to get on a plane 12 weeks after the baby arrives and come on to have vagina vulgaris.
Yes, well, yeah. Well, I am going on a 4-week holiday after this, okay. So don't feel too sorry for me.
I mean, I think the most important thing, surely, in life in general, particularly in terms of this topic that we're talking about, is that peace of mind for you as a mum, and therefore acceptance of you and your journey and, you know, genuine self-love and self-care is the best thing that you can do for your children.
Yeah.
From when they are created all the way through to the point they don't need you anymore, which will be never.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just in case you didn't like work that bit out yet. I don't even have kids and I know that. And then you also mentioned just now that you said something like, of course I broke the rules. So
yes,
are you quite naughty?
I am a little, I think.
Yeah.
I mean,
that would explain the success of VidaGlow.
I am. And it was funny because I was talking to someone today about, she's pregnant for the first time with her 13 week. And I mean, this is probably not a very good thing to say next to a doctor, but I was like, you can eat raw fish. It's fine. Like, you're not going to eat raw fish from the sushi train that's been sitting there, but you can. And yes, you can have coffee. And, you know, like I am a little bit more of, instead of erring on the side of caution, I would say I'm more, what's the opposite of that?
A risk taker.
I think I'm more of a risk taker in my, you know. So,
like having a panic attack about the fact that you don't eat raw fish, Anna.
There's a great Instagram account called Boob to Food, and she talks about this in quite a lot of detail, you know, how soft cheese is pasteurized and the kind of raw fish that you can eat, and different cultures actually eat a lot of raw fish.
That's not the point, Anna. You just don't want that on your head.
I mean, that's true.
I don't care about your friend. I care about you. And basically, she ends up in hospital with some kind of like E. coli. I don't want you to be like,
relaxed pregnant person when it comes to all of that.
Got children keeping you up at night. You don't want deep concern. I'm not helping, am I? Anna's going to leave the podcast going, oh, I've got to make my friend. As you know, Anna, I'm literally, or as I've already said, I'm a huge fan of your collagen. I think I discovered you, I mean, actually, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, and your team reached out and said, did I want to try it? And I remember saying to my agent, oh, another collagen brand. Okay, why not? And also, because she's like totally psychic, she's like, just try it because you never know what will happen in the future. You might end up like getting to know the, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
And I saw immediate results. Mm. I mean, like absolutely immediate results. Mm. And occasionally now, because obviously I have to travel for work if I'm filming and stuff, and if I run out or I can't get it, or I'm also like, if I'm really honest with supplements, I have these periods where I completely forget.
Mm.
And that can go on for 2 or 3 weeks. And then I'm looking in the mirror going, I don't look as good as I used to look. And without fail, if I start taking your collagen, particularly if I do I know you said you don't need the 3 sachets, but on the box it says you can take up to 3 sachets. And if I hit the 3 sachets hard and, you know, make sure that I'm really stringent and I see an immediate plump effect, I'd be really curious to know, in a little more detail, how you think it helped your hair. Can I, because I just don't, and Sarah, please, if you have any kind of thoughts on this, can you jump in? Because I'm curious about what that does to our internal system that would help.
I mean, I think collagen is probably my favorite supplement of all time. And it's interesting listening to you say another collagen brand, because it does feel like collagen is a commodity at the
moment.
Yours
is totally different though.
But
it's the best
it wasn't
on the market
when we started. But there's so many things to look for. Like, what is the molecule weight of the product? Ours is as low as 2000 Daltons, which is by far the lowest that's available. Where is it sourced from? Is it really sustainable? Because there's a lot of greenwashing that happens. Where is the collagen come from? What type of fish? What is the type of testing that's done? Are there any clinical studies? We will not bring a new product to market unless it's substantiated by quite robust clinical trials. Mm. Last financial year, we spent over $1 million Australian on clinical studies. Mm. Every ingredient in our women's health range is clinically studied ingredients. You know, like a product like Radiance, for example, which focuses on pigmentation, we did that clinical study by an independent facility in Mauritius where women have more olive and dark complexions, and we tested pigmentation on olive skin as opposed to Caucasian skin. So it's a real passion project of mine of having a product that has integrity. And collagen, if you take it correctly, if you take a good quality product, and you really need to ask questions, you know, you need to say, where is this collagen? Because a product that has a 2000 Dalton molecule weight and a product that has a 15,000 Dalton
what
molecule
does that
weight
mean?
It's very different
what does
in
that
how it's
mean?
Absorbed.
So what does that mean?
It means, so the way that collagen works is, once, say you have it in your glass of water and it passes through the lining of the stomach, it's absorbed and distributed by the bloodstream, mm-hmm. not by the gut. So it's essentially pre-digested, mm-hmm. right? And it travels through tiny blood vessels to the collagen matrix underneath the surface of the skin. So you have your epidermis on the outside, your dermis on the inside, and the hypodermis or the subcutis, mm-hmm. which is the inner layer of the skin. And that's where the collagen matrix is located. So it does two things: increases collagen levels because you're putting more collagen in, but most importantly is it stimulates fibroblast proliferation, which is the cells responsible for collagen production in the body. Collagen is the second largest substance in the body behind water. So it makes up our hair, skin, and nails. It's a building block of everything: our bones, our joints, our teeth, our tendons, our ligaments. So, and we naturally lose that through the aging process. So, and you know, there's a lot of statistics that get thrown out, 1% a year from 25. The truth is, we don't really know. On average, it's 1 to 2. But, you know, your lifestyle, your genetics, do you smoke? Are you in air conditioning? Like, what kind of diet? All of those things can be collagen, like accelerate the depletion of collagen in your system. So for me, it's like the perfect base for anybody to take. And I really think that if you are consistent with any supplements, because the trouble with supplementation is, and collagen, if you are consistent within about 3 weeks, you're pretty much hooked, and you do
three
get
days
those results.
With yours. 3 days. I say it's 3 days.
I think 3 days three is days, more of a placebo, just between you and I.
Well, 3 days is placebo.
But three,
are you saying I'm a fantasist?
About 3 weeks.
I am a fantasist.
It's probably the water you're drinking with the collagen.
Yeah. For no, 3 days, I mean, that's true.
It's definitely the collagen. I might have been snorting it. It's true.
But if you are consistent with it, I mean, the clinical trials are all between 30 to 90 days, and the results really differ between, you know, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, and 12 weeks. But if you are consistent with it, you do see results in a really short amount of time if you're taking a good quality product.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
At the very beginning, you talked about the strength or the quality. Just for people listening, can you just unpick that a tiny bit, what that is? Is it the same, basically? Like, if you buy vitamin C from Holland & Barrett, I always say to people, don't buy it from Holland & Barrett. It's got, like, you know, 5% vitamin C in it. Versus if you buy a vitamin C from Solgar, it's probably a much better quality. Is it that same idea?
Interesting comparison. Like, for example, for vitamin C, so you need, you know, just say you need 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C for the body to produce collagen. The trouble is with a lot of hair, skin, and nail supplements is that they'll have the minimum requirement to make claims. And depending on where that is, like, for example, in Australia, the minimum requirement to make claims is 50 milligrams, but your body needs 1,000 to produce collagen. So like a hair, skin, and nail supplement, right? So then it used to be thought that the absorption of pills or tablets were about 20 to 30%, but the Physician's Desk reference paper, which was updated in 2016 on this particular topic, it's closer to 10 to 20%. So this is the thing about supplements and why, like when we were talking about the prenatal offline prior, I was talking about the importance of having one tablet a day, because most people are leaving their house every day. They're rattling because they're taking 4 fish oils and a multivitamin but actually, like, we need to think about, what are we taking these supplements for? How are we concern led? And another thing is that particularly for women's health is something that I'm passionate about, because a lot of supplements are, women's health was considered niche until about 3 to 4 years ago. And a lot of supplements are actually made for men and then generalized among women, because the research that it takes to have supplementation specifically for women is so complicated. because of menstrual cycles and hormones. And women, there's a great quote by Dr. Stacey Simpson. She says, women are not small men. And I think so in order for us to understand what are you taking, whether it's a beauty supplement, you know, when people come to me, I mean, we have so many products now and people are like, oh, should I be taking Hairology, collagen and this? I'm like, no, pick one thing. Like, what is the one thing that you want? A, you're going to be more consistent if you're taking one thing. And then you're going to know what your results are from and also have a concern-led approach. So I think for women's health, like the prenatal, for example, was a huge passion part of mine because I've had 9 pregnancies and 4 live births. And, you know, like having, so I've taken multiple prenatal supplements and they're often really big. You have to take 3 to 4 a day when it's hard enough in the first trimester to take anything. You really should be taking a prenatal 3 to 6 months, I mean, ideally 6 months, but at least 3 months prior to trying to conceive. And then you want to have folate that's both active and non-active. You want to have a non-constipating iron because I don't know about you, but with progesterone in those first, if you're constipated enough as it is, let alone then taking an iron supplement that makes you more constipated. Having something for morning sickness or, you know, having a DHA that's, you know, like that's a really good quality DHA, but then also being able to make it vegan. But most important, taking one a day in a capsule that, mind you, is in a manageable size, you know, because when the capsules are this big, you can't really neck them because you feel so unwell anyway.
It's an interesting suggestion, though, to be basing your supplement support on, I think it was a beautiful expression. You said concern-led choices.
Yeah.
So obviously with your prenatal, you were like heavily invested in it because it was like really personal to you. And you're like, I don't want to take 300 million supplements.
Yeah.
And also they didn't work anyway.
Yeah.
So let's make one that really works and you only have to take one a day. And that's amazing. When you were in the process of developing this absolutely phenomenal new range of supplements for women's health, what other things that you were kind of targeting?
Yes, great question. So what we did, and all of our formulations takes about 2 years, except for Clear, which is our acne product, which took about 3. But for women's health, we looked at through consumer research from our existing customers and new customers, what are the main health concerns that women are looking at. And what came out of that research was I was interested in bringing out a pregnancy. And also from a business perspective, it was also like we lose a lot of customers in that trying to conceive and pregnancy phase. How do we keep them on, you know, bringing a Vita Glow supplement in that fertility space? But then what we discovered from our research is that women have a lot of bloating issues, digestive issues. Stress is a major concern.
Hence
of women.
The gut health and stress.
And the de-stress.
These are like gummies. You can chew these. These are amazing.
And then overall well-being, general immunity, which is our multivitamin. Now let's take the multivitamin to answer your previous question as an example. Majority of multivitamins have so many ingredients. Our multivitamin has 11 key ingredients that are clinically studied, and it's a 2-in-1 capsule. So you're getting a fish oil and a multivitamin at the same time in therapeutic doses that are specifically designed and formulated for women. So it's almost like a less is more approach into everything that we do.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We're going to take a short break. Before we do, I just want to let you know that this podcast is produced by the female-founded production company, Pineapple Audio Production. Pineapple create groundbreaking podcasts from concept through to your headphones at the very highest level of audio. Their international team support independent podcasts like mine, The Happy Vagina, as well as major brands like the BBC and Grazia. And they are super passionate about helping young people into the audio industry. To find out more, go to pineappleaudioproduction.com or check them out on Instagram at pineappleaudioproduction.
As part of VidaGlow's mission to further educate women on their own health and as a commitment to progress, VidaGlow has pledged a donation of £1 for every women's health product sold and will donate it to Lady Garden Foundation, the women's health charity that helps fund vital scientific research that will revolutionise the treatment into gynaecological health. To learn more about VidaGlow, their range of women's health supplements and their partnership with Lady Garden Foundation, visit www.vidaglow.com.
And I loved what you said earlier about women are not small men. So let's come back to that because these are really formulated for women. Dr. Sarah, can I come to you? Because I feel like I've been ignoring you, but I'm literally like, I had all these things that I was going to ask you, Anna, and we've literally hardly asked any of them because I could talk to you for absolutely hours. But I do, Sarah, I want to, you know, I want to get an idea from a medical point of view on supplements because it is one of the areas that is ongoingly controversial. And I feel like Anna's given us some excellent insight into that in terms of it's about the quality.
Yeah.
So that's really helpful. Thank you. I also feel, and my community on the Happy Vagina, one of the ongoing conversations that we have that I find really difficult. I do think to a certain extent that women are vulnerable to being sold stuff that we kind of are told that we need beauty, like off the chart, whether it be fashion or like stuff that we need to do to our hair or whatever the thing is. But then through to supplements as well, it does feel a little bit like that whole area as well. Not the pregnancy period, but I do feel like also women are a bit vulnerable to being manipulated in that sense as well. However, I am a huge fan of supplements and I've always found that they make a massive difference to me when I take them. And as I've said at the beginning of the podcast, I often have these periods when I forget and then I'm like, oh, I feel better now. But I guess, is there anything else other than what Anna has said around the quality that you would add as a professional doctor, particularly someone being kind of like quite commercial, so you're on television, so you're kind of like, you're dealing with the nation as a whole, that you would add around supplements and what the true use of them is and should be?
I think you're right in saying that societal norms have changed what we necessarily need to take versus what might be an additional bonus or what society in effect says is beautiful and therefore we must take. But there are also lots of supplements out there that may be necessary to plug in nutrient gaps that people are having in their diets and their lifestyle. In an absolute ideal world, everyone would get all their supplementation through a wonderfully balanced, healthy diet, and we would all just live forever and everything would be great. But unfortunately, busy lives, not being able to afford some of the, you know, some of the healthier foods that are available, you know, people who choose certain diets, they're all going to be people that may have a nutrient deficiency and therefore might need supplementation. Particularly in women's health, there are certain nutrients that we tend to lack a little bit more than men, for example. So iron is a good example because obviously during menstruation, we lose a lot of iron, especially if you have heavy periods. And if you aren't able to take in as much as you're losing, there becomes that iron deficiency. And that's where supplementation plays a really good role. Calcium, vitamin D, unfortunately, as we get older, go past menopause, we are at higher risk than men of osteoporosis. And so if you're not eating enough calcium in your diet, if you're vegan, if you know you're lactose intolerant, all of these kind of things, you may need to take supplementation. And with vitamin D, we don't get a huge amount from our diet. It's mainly from a reaction for the sun on our skin. In the UK, we only have sun for a very short period of time. And so actually everyone is advised to take 10 micrograms of vitamin D every day between the months of October and March. And if you're pregnant or you're lactating to breastfeeding, you're actually supposed to take it all the way through. So I think, you know, those are just some examples of which we may very well need supplementation as a woman more so than a man.
Do you think, so you would actually confirm that you think women do definitely need supplementation more than a man does? And is that mostly because of our changing hormones?
It may very well be that they require different supplementation. So, you know, there will be things that a man might require, you know, differently to us. Their muscle mass is higher, so they have higher expenditure of energy, and that might therefore, you know, create certain nutrient needs and demands. But certainly there are certain nutrients and vitamins and minerals that I've mentioned that would be more appropriate, namely than men, you know, folate, for example. Mm. Most men are able to get enough folate from their diet, but women, because their needs go up in pregnancy, that's another time that, you know, they're going to need it more so than.
So you would advocate for human beings to be taking supplements that are aligned with their gender, actually, not so, like, you know, if there was, like, I don't know, like if there's a really good multivit that we kind of know has got all the really good high quality stuff in it that's on the shop shelves, try and say that three times backwards, on the shop shelves for everyone to access, and it's not too expensive and all those things. If a woman was in the store looking at that and she had the question of having that one, which is for all sexes, or women's one, go for the women's one. As long as the quality's good. And it's called Vida Glow. Sorry, is that like it? I mean,
I didn't want to say anything, but since you said it.
They look like this.
A woman has a nutrient deficit, then yes, ideally focusing it on a woman's brand, or, you know, a brand certainly that has put more research into women over men would be preferable. You know, you alluded to the fact that there's so little research done to women, you know, that we're not just small men. There's, you know, over time, unfortunately, research has mainly been focused on men. And it's just meant that all of the studies, or a large majority of the historical studies, have been done on men, and only small percentages have been done on women. And that kind of skews what we're taking. You know, we may either be taking something that's not beneficial enough to us, or maybe even taking things that could be harmful to us based on male physiology and male anatomy.
It was only in 1993 that legislation was passed globally that you know, research for women's health in particular was made mandatory. That's only 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's quite a shocking statistic.
It's a really complicated area, this, because the reason that women were, well, actually, I don't know whether the scientific testing that you're referencing, but I do know about the legislation changing at that time, was I suppose it's a question. Is scientific testing for, like, a medication for a heart disorder the same scientific testing as happens for supplements?
No.
Right. So the thing, so, and I know that it trickles down. Like, I'm not trying to, like, go, yeah, but it's not the same thing. But
yeah,
because I do deeply understand that core testing will then kind of, like, umbrella all testing. Yeah. And I know the thing for me, Sarah, is, and I find this really confusing, the reason that women were excluded from clinical trials was because they tried some medication on some women, and then those women got pregnant. They ended up with deformed babies. So at the time, with the knowledge that they had, okay, they decided to exclude. It wasn't, I think sometimes I see on, particularly on social media, I've got, like, there's this kind of, like, it's so bad. Women were never included in trials. These evil men, they excluded women, and, like, you know, and I'm like, guys, they were doing their best with the information that they had at the time. And actually there's an element, because I'm a humanist, not just a feminist, of the people that were making the decisions, which were mostly doctors, which were all men, let's face it, but were men, all men, but they were trying to make decisions that would protect women, right? Is that your, do you think, I think. Do you think that too?
I think, look, there's
or
an
do
element.
Do you think it was just misogyny and sexism?
I don't feel like it's all that all the time, but I do think, yes, in a way they want to protect against, you know, any issues with the baby. That is a really fair, you know, fair thing to want to protect against. But I think there's also an element of it being a bit more complicated, yes, with women.
It's like the vaccine, when they were like, they didn't even look at the hormones, and then apparently it has genuinely impacted estrogen. Like, part of the reason that Great Britain's got an HRT crisis or a menopause crisis, I think, is because the vaccine impacted everyone's estrogen. Yeah. So everyone was like,
but the menstrual cycle does cause a huge amount of complication and complexities, mm-hmm, to, yeah, testing. So that is probably also one of the reasons. The other reason is the costs go up. Your subject groups of people that you're using has to change. So it was more a generalization, I would say.
Yeah.
I think that we're making headways, but
what do you mean a generalization? What was
like
a generalization?
Like we generalize the results on men to women. And then we change the doses. And I thought it was interesting what you said about sometimes we're actually not getting the right doses for women because they're based on studies that were traditionally done for men.
Yeah, and they don't include hormones.
Exactly.
And a woman, you know, we have at least two major hormone changes, ovulation, period, every single month. Mm. Okay, so this is controversial and I have got no idea what to make of it, but there is an argument. So I've had lots of people on and some say, like Dr. Sara saying, yes, absolutely, a probiotic can help your vagina. And then you've got these other sort of like mostly men doctors who go, no, it's so ridiculous that your gut can impact your vagina. Dr. Sara.
There have been studies to suggest that certain strains of lactobacillus can help with vaginal health, though, to help maintain the pH balance within the vagina and therefore reduce the risk of things like thrush or bacterial vaginosis. So I see that there is a role for probiotics within the vaginal health in the same way that there's a role for them within the stomach, within the skin.
And again, Anna, I would come back to you on this then. So gut pro, obviously, this is going to be amazing for everyone's vaginas.
Yes.
And also the gut. I mean, you know, gut, vagina, let's go vagina. But if someone takes, there's a few products that claim to be like a probiotic on the market that seem to have quite a lot of sugar in them. Maybe you drink them first thing in the morning. I can't quite work out how they can claim to be a probiotic when actually they're just full of sugar because I think sugar counterbalances probiotic and stuff. So my question to you is, does it need to be a really high strength?
It needs to be the correct strain of probiotic, to Dr. Sara's point. So like, for example, with Clear, we have a probiotic in that as well, but that focuses on the gut-skin axis. Here we're focusing on the gut-vaginal axis. So it's intimate health and vaginal health. It's working on the microbiome of the gut as well as of the vagina. So it does depend on the type of strains. Like, for example, I've had mastitis 5 times in 6 weeks. So I've done 45 days of antibiotics and I've changed from Flucloxacillin to Keflex because it really affects antibiotics. I mean, it's the most antibiotics I've ever taken in my...
I gave you such a big hug as well when you came in. Did I hurt your nipples?
No, it's okay. But I am I finished my 5th round of antibiotics this Friday and I just cannot wait because I cannot tell you the effect that I've never taken so much antibiotics in my life. But unfortunately, mastitis affects me so badly that I would rather recover from a cesarean other than those 2 days before the antibiotics kick in with mastitis. But we're getting off topic. But the point about that is that, for example, I'm
really worried about your breasts. So it's fine. it's not off topic because the hug I gave you was so like, it was a bear hug.
So like I'm taking a specific strain of probiotic now that will help with post-antibiotic. Do you know what I mean? There are different strains. You would explain that better than me.
Right? Take the probiotic before the antibiotic.
Like but you often don't know that you're going to need to have antibiotics.
But then therefore, take the probiotic all the time.
All the time, yes. And I think that gut health, I mean, the studies are just increasing so much in the benefits of gut health just for overall well-being. Mm.
Can I just come to Dr. Sara? When I said take it all the time, there was a little like, is there any suggestion? I'm really curious to know, is there a suggestion? Because I was told this by a naturopath 10 years ago, that it's good with a probiotic to have a bit of a break, that actually it's good to take it and then have a break from it. Is that still...
Well, I think the reason my face went a little bit funny is about taking it before the antibiotic or during the antibiotic is that the antibiotic, depending on the type of antibiotic, but it may very well kill it. That bacteria. So it may be somewhat wasted during the treatment. And the whole idea of the probiotic is to replace what you've lost.
Okay.
But not all antibiotics will kill all bacteria. So it may very well be that it'd be absolutely fine to do that. But it's just to say that some might kill off the bacteria that you're just...
I personally don't take probiotics when I'm on antibiotics.
Yeah. Okay, good. Top tip. I had no idea about any of that. Thank you so much. I've learned so much today. I'm literally, we are kind of running out of time, but I want to talk about aging because Anna, one of the things that I love about VidaGlow is that you don't talk about anti-aging. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because I actually, last year, I coined it. I decided, I was like pottering around in my flat, probably writing a script or something. And I was like, I'm not going to call it aging. I'm going to call it upgrading. And I tested it out. You can say, you know, let's say that you can't run anymore because your knees don't support the run. You can say, I don't run anymore because I've got an upgrading body. You can say, my skin's upgrading. You could walk through a supermarket, I mean, a department store, and rather than say to you, would you like to try this anti-aging cream, they could say to you, would you like to try this upgrading cream? And so I'm on my own with the movement. I just want to make it really clear that I have no, there is not a campaign. The campaign's me. And I'm just like, kind of like, and I suggest it to Goop as well. And I thought they might pick up on it and run with it, but they haven't. So, but I do really appreciate the fact that you aren't seemingly interested.
Really, I mean, I really believe in aging gracefully. I mean, aging is, I mean, I wouldn't want to be any younger than I am now. I wouldn't want to be back in my 20s. I couldn't think of anything worse. You know, I think that there's a lot to be said with the experience, wisdom, like simple things like knowing when to be quiet, you know, how much you learn with age and how important that is. And I think that your style is always a lot more cemented as you get older. You know, the way that you wear, your confidence. I mean, you may not look like you did when you were younger, but I think most women actually look better with age because they just look like a true version of themselves, really.
Can we also add to knowing when to be quiet? Because I like that, because there's this kind of feeling of coming into a deeper self, but also knowing when not to be.
Yeah, and to speak that's up. True as well. Absolutely.
Like, you know, like really knowing that your power and that you deserve to have a voice.
I was talking about that with in the taxi today, like the things that you would put up with or you would allow people to say to you when you were younger. You would never allow that now. Like I look back at things that were said to me or, you know, and I just think, I can't believe I said nothing. That would never get past me now, you know. So there is a lot of strength in getting older. And I think actually it's quite a beautiful thing.
Zara, what do you think about the media and the pressure that's put on women? Because I also do find it, like, you know, full disclosure, I'm like consistently talking on all of my platforms, you know, as an actress, but also as the host of the Happy Journey podcast about, and then I find myself I always put the Paris filter on my social media stories. Like, and I'm like, Mika, when, no, I mean, like, you know, and then I'm like, who's that in the mirror? That's not me. No, I don't. I don't really use strong filters. But, you know, it's really difficult. It's really difficult. I recently did a photo shoot. And the difficulty for me as a woman in the media is that my peers are being edited, photoshopped. They're doing so, like, there's all this sort of thing. And it's really hard to be the warrior, to be the one that just says, I'm not doing any of it. And I just, working in the media, have you seen a change? Do you think it's getting better? Because I feel like we're talking about it, right? Everyone's talking about it. Women who are leading within women's health are going, no more, no more. But then you've still got, you know, the negative stuff about women in the press.
I think it's very difficult when society's, I guess their definition of beauty is quite narrow. That definition has traditionally been based on youthfulness. And I think we are moving away from it with warriors, as you say. But there are certain industries, you know, within the media, entertainment, fashion, and I think they are all still maintaining that youthful appearance is what's relevant and what's the competitive thing to do. Having said that, I think there's something, as you say, lovely about embracing the diversity of beauty, about valuing women's experience and their contributions to life that they can portray because of their age. I think we probably just need to kind of introduce a bit more inclusivity and accepting society. But yeah, it's hard.
And just as a mental health advocate, because I think, you know, we have a choice as human beings whether to buy into that kind of stuff that's portrayed in the media. But often I think the voice in our heads goes unnoticed. So we don't even, you know the voice in your head that's the real, like, asshole. The one that, like, says you're, and you go, shh, fuck off, I'm not, go away, you know? But then there's the other stuff that can be so, like,
subtle.
Yeah, what would be, as someone who is really invested in mental health care, what would be your suggestion to, I'm going to stick with women.
Yeah.
To overcome that thought process.
For women, to everyone. For me, it's about practicing gratitude. You can practice gratitude in your everyday life, you know, the small things, grateful for the coffee, grateful for this, you know, this meeting. But you can do the same with your body. Be grateful for the things it can do, the functionality that it has, the activities and experiences that it's allowed you to have, rather than necessarily focusing on things that it doesn't bring you. And I know when you're sick or you're unwell or, you know, you've got health issues, it's hard not to focus on those things. But I think really trying to to grasp at the things that it has done for you.
Acceptance, actually. Like, I hear you say gratitude, but in some ways, it's like accepting that this body and this face has come here to serve God's purpose rather than necessarily that it's here to, like, you know, be something that sits within the capitalist realm. Like, you know, we're here to be part of life, aren't we?
Yeah.
And accepting what we've been given to use within that.
Yeah, that's an element of mindfulness in itself, you know, being present, accepting that things, negativity, you know, anything will come your way, accepting that it is there and trying to find ways around it rather than battling against it the whole time.
Yeah, well said.
Anna, you said that, you know, as you've become marginally older, you don't let people talk to you in particular ways anymore. As this is the Happy Vagina podcast, I feel like I've been really cheeky all the way through, but I am going to finish with my final question. And even though you're like a superhero founder, I have to ask you both. What makes your vagina happy today?
You know what? My vagina is really happy at the moment that I decided to, instead of trying to squeeze into my old jeans, to buy jeans that were two sizes bigger and that I can be really comfortable in.
I love that.
And I can still wear jeans in postpartum because people tell you you can't. But I love wearing jeans and I thought, fuck it. I'm just going to buy jeans that are two sizes too big and I'm going to rock them. But and that's great.
You look so great.
I feel really comfortable because I was trying to squeeze into my old jeans and there's only one pair that fits. And my vagina was really unhappy in that one pair of old jeans that I can do up. So I thought, before this trip, I'm going to go two sizes up and just rock that new look for me. And I'm happy.
My vagina is absolutely amazing. Because actually, two tight jeans really do have a bad impact
they
on.
Really
I
do.
Can get cystitis, I think, from just wearing my jeans. You know those mum? Do you know when the high waisted jeans?
And you can't
but they were tight,
and
then I'm like, bring back the low back baggies.
Oh God,
Dr. Sarah, what makes your vagina happy today? Other than the fact you're pregnant, congratulations!
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
So actually,
won't make it.
Yeah,
happy,
I was going to say I don't think your vagina will be happy about that.
But let's face it, it's been a happy vagina quite recently.
It's seen some action. Doing nothing makes my vagina happy. So for example, avoiding every product out there, trying to get you to douche it, to spray it, to make it apparently cleaner, apparently smellier, apparently all of these things. Just do none
absolutely
of them.
Absolutely outrageous. Disgusting.
Don't put anything on them.
Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Well, I don't normally share what makes my vagina happy, but as I'm walking out of this podcast with some of your gut pro, my vagina is paying. I'm paying it forwards or anyway, it's excited about trying the Gut Pro and I will report back to everyone in the community about the intimate details of how the Gut Pro works on my vagina and vulva health. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. You've
been absolutely amazing, both of you.
Thank you so much for having me. That was really fun, ladies.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well done, team.
I'm Mika Simmons. That was founder of VidaGlow, Anna Lay, and Dr. Sarah Kayat. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you tuned in to last week's episode with Laura Whitmore as we do an even deeper dive into women's health. And a very special thanks again to our partners of this episode, VidaGlow. To learn more about VidaGlow, their new range of women's health supplements, and their partnership with Lady Garden Foundation, go to www.vidaglow.com. That's www.vidaglow.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.